Hi everyone, welcome to 21st Century Saints. Now this is a bit of an impromptu episode that we haven't scheduled. So what we're going to do is just take a minute or two while our viewers come and join us. We're going to send out the links. So if it's okay with you all, we're just going to probably be quiet for a few minutes while we do that. So we will be right with you. And we'd also ask if you are able to share, please do that. It's so strange being silent on our podcast. I think this is possibly the longest time we've ever been quiet, but yes, thank you for bearing with us. So I'm just going to get this link sent out, our YouTube channel link sent out to sort of all the places that we would normally send it to. And hopefully we will have some of you all come and join us, because this really was a surprise tonight. We knew we were going to come on at some time, but you know, we have been super busy. Things have been crazy. Sarah, how has your schedule looked even just today?
Today has been manically busy, but it's the last sort of few weeks of my life seem to have been so busy. And it's taken me hours to get around to phoning somebody, because every time I try to phone them, I'm on the phone to somebody else, or I'm on a Zoom call to somebody. And it's predominantly about safeguarding and church and things like this. Yeah, really, really busy.
It's crazy how this has turned into a full-time job and then some. It's just, we hadn't anticipated this. But you know, we're passionate about it. This is really important to all of us. So we're not only really happy to be doing this, but we have lots to tell you. There have been, and we've been promising you this episode for quite some time. So we really appreciate all of the donations that we've been receiving, and we had wanted to tell you how we have used those donations. We've also wanted to share, you know, what we've been doing just in general with your support, and what kind of difference your support has made to the work that we're doing. So I'm almost done sending out a couple of links. So if you guys are on social media, I'd love it if you helped and put that link out too. So, okay, we have a few people here. So what we're going to do is, you know, we do have lots to tell you about. We're just going to get started. And for those of you who are watching later on, we just want to say it's great to have you with us. As always, I am your host, Jane Christie. This is 21st Century Saints, our podcast and live stream for members and those affiliated with the church here in the United Kingdom and around the world. My son is demanding attention from his father. This is what our podcast looks like. It's real life. We have families. They come and interrupt us, and that's okay, because we podcast from our kitchens. Sarah's out in her garage. Are you freezing, Sarah?
Actually, it's not too bad, because the heater has actually been left on for the last couple of days. So our shed, which is very, very luxurious, I have to say, is actually for once warm.
I love it.
We might not be able to pay the electric bill at the end of the month, but the shed is warm.
So our co-host, Queen Sarah Elizabeth Delaney, is right here. Do you want to say hey?
Hi, everybody. Yep, we're here back to talk with you again about our favourite topic, which is the church.
And we have lots to talk about tonight. So some of this is going to be a little bit of a flyby. Some of this is going to, you know, we can possibly ask more questions if you all have any in the comments or in the show notes. We do love to hear from you. Some stuff we're not going to be able to say much about, but we just want to give you a sense of what we've been doing. So if you're ready, this is what 2022 has looked like. So you all remember quite a while back now, it was sort of towards the end of the summer, we had created an open letter. And that letter was basically asking the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints formally to do safeguarding. Now, we had some incredible people co-sign our open letter. So it's still on our website, 21stcenturysaints.org, which I am going to send. I'm going to put a link out to in just a second. Sarah, can you remember some of our co-signers?
Oh, co-signers, we had Nemo the Mormon, Peter Bleakley, Lynn Bleakley, Dr. Julie Hanks sent a few that said she was wanted to sign. We had Natasha Heffler signed, Radio Free Mormon, John DeLynn.
All the cool kids.
All the cool kids on the block. All the cool kids. All the people that actually were prepared to say, do you know what? We're really concerned about safeguarding and we actually want to show you that we support safeguarding, changing and developing. So people that have got any insight and understanding of what's happening around abuse within the church were coming forward and saying, we totally support you. It was interesting that we had a lot of people offering support but saying they were really anxious about their name appearing on a letter because they were worried it would cause some problems with their bishop or state president. And we kind of don't think it would. Our experience is it wouldn't have that impact. But people, we have said, if it doesn't feel safe for you, then don't sign.
So far, our co-signers, and we say so far because it's still an open letter, an existing document. And so we don't only want podcasters and academics and people who work in this space to sign the letter. It started off that way. We wanted to all sign it to kick things off. So yeah, we are now taking names, and if you want to add your name to this open letter, then please just get in touch with us on the website or on social media. Just let us know you want to sign and we'll add your name. So we have all of the Brit Avengers. We have Nemo the Mormon. We have Laura and Julian Heath of Sunstone UK. We have Peter Bleakley, Priesthood Dispatches, Bill Real, Radio Free Mormon. We have Lindsay Hansen Park, Marco Fuentes from Mormon Neurodivergence. We have Drew Hunter. We have Natasha Helfer, Lynn Bleakley, Scott from the incredible Rammy Umpton Ruminations, which I hope you're all checking out. We have Maven Brody, Katie Moore, Brian Brace. We have Julie Hanks, Charles Lawson, who's an author. We have Debbie Coleman, Donnell Allen, Mark G. Nelson. You know what? I am going to stop right there because the list goes on. So thank you all so much for signing so far. We also have one of the other things that we've done this year is the petition. So that's currently up at the moment still. We would like to invite you still to sign it. We're still looking for a name date. I'm just going to put that link out in the chat. It's so weird not having Alana here because I've relied on Alana over the past few months for doing comments. So I'm trying to sort of squint and I'm too big to wear glasses.
While we're on talking about the open letter, Jane, before we move on,
please
I think it's really important to say, even if you are not a member of the church, whether you're disaffiliated from the church, whether you're an ex-mo, whether you've never been a member, whether you're a member of another faith community, you don't have to say what faith community, you don't have to give too much information, but you can sign the letter if you agree with the content, which is around safeguarding children. If you agree with our proposals and our requests, then you are really welcome to sign that letter.
So we've had no formal response from our open letter, which unfortunately I'm sure comes as no surprise to most of our audience. Now, what we did get to do, again, thanks to donor funding, was we got to hand deliver that later. We've delivered it to members of our area presidency. We've been able to travel a little bit to do that. And it's always been received with grace and appreciation and positivity, but we don't have a formal response. So then we have the petition. As I said, we also, now this is something we're going to just mention and then come back to. We have template letters on our website. Now those template letters we put up there so that we could suggest ways we wanted people to contact their bishops and state presidents, MPs, to ask about safeguarding in their local congregations. Now there were templates for members, there were templates for non-members, there you know, all sorts of whatever you stood, templates, but if you have a child in the primary youth programs, and then if you don't. So there's a whole variety there. And we're going to tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. We also constructed a website. Oh my goodness, it's a bit rough and ready, right? But I managed to get most of the information that we have up on the website. And there's a lot still to go up, but the vast majority is up there. And that's saw an incredible amount of traffic. Having the website alone, thank you to donors who allowed us to be able to do this. Having the website alone has allowed people to contact us who wouldn't normally have been able to do so. So thank you so much. We also, this past September, October, we presented at Sunstone. And we talked about blessing journeys. Now, we still need to record that and share it with our audience here, because we're hoping that you guys might have fun. There was a lot of Scottishness about it, and we really drew on our Scottish roots. So we were talking about blessing journeys and digital spaces. It was really, really empowering and yeah, quite emotional in a lot of ways too. So thank you to everyone who supported our presentation, and we hope to be able to get that recorded for you very, very soon. Now, we also at Sunstone UK this year hosted a panel on LGBTQ issues. And that panel, surprisingly, a lot of what we discussed was around safeguarding. So that was something that we got a lot out of. We're also delighted to say that the panel itself and what we discussed was something that was of great interest to many leaders and members. And we've been asked to sort of provide more information about some of the things that we discussed. In addition to that, this is where I think the bulk of our work has been most recently. So we've been working with individuals who have experienced some form of abuse within the church. How that has looked, because obviously, you know, we're just podcasters. We're just women with microphones. As much as we work in this space, we are not best placed to offer support. So one of the things that we do is to signpost. Sarah, do you want to maybe talk about what support has looked like for us? What happens when someone reaches out?
I think it's looked like a range of different things based on the need that the person coming to us. Some people have been very clearly in need of therapeutic support and recognising the need for therapeutic support, either for themselves or for a family member or a friend that has been abused. And we've been able to link them in with services, give them information about various therapeutic agencies, services that specialise in that area. And that's been really useful to be able to do that, to be able to say, hey, listen, talk to these people, give them a call. We can help you phone them. We can get in contact and ask them to call you, where that's kind of an okay thing to do. It's not always. We've been able to look at health issues for some people. Some people have come forward worrying about health, worrying about things that they've neglected because of abuse. For example, it's not unusual to have conversations with women that have been completely unable to go and have a cervical smear because it triggers feelings of abuse for them. Or we've been able to have conversations about how they can access healthcare for themselves and look after that part of their life. We've been able to talk to people about legal services. There's a range of legal services that people need post-abuse, and that might be they might need to talk to the police, they might need to talk to a solicitor, they might need a solicitor for a range of reasons. They might need legal advice on what do I do because I've been abused. They might need legal advice about being rehoused, being an injunction order, a restraining order. They might need to understand the criminal sentence that's been given to an abuser or why there's been no criminal prosecution. They might need to get some advice to help them understand that. They might need to talk to victim support services because there might be a prosecution or police investigation going on. So there's been a wide range of services across a whole spectrum, sort of health, legal, mental health, therapeutic work, family support. Sometimes there's couple of people that have been really having problems with drug and alcohol abuse as a result of trying to cope with trauma and self-medicating to manage the pain of trauma. And it's been really positive to try and for us to kind of find out who the appropriate agencies are for them to talk to. So kind of really across the board.
Now, one of the things that I have been most struck by is a lot of the times people are looking for something pragmatic. They're looking for some action or something to happen. Often it is possibly, you know, looking at legal recourse and what they can do. So we do have lots of advice on that, but often people are reaching out to us to ask us what's happening. Is the church listening?
Right.
Please, Sarah, I'll go.
And I think that's a very difficult one, isn't it? We're asked all the time, what are the church doing about safeguarding? What are your leaders doing about safeguarding? And it's embarrassing, it's shameful, and it's very difficult to say over and over again, well, this is what we're asking our leaders to do. This is why we're asking them to do this. And to find that you might have individual leaders that want to do this, but they don't feel they've got the power, the capacity or ability to do that until the area presidency give them permission. And so they're sitting around waiting, and we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, because we are going to tell you what we know up until this point that the church is doing. We're just about to have a conversation about it. Mm. Now, I appreciate that what we're talking about is serious stuff. One of the major issues that we focus on as part of safeguarding, the LGBTQ community are one of the protected groups. They're described as one of the vulnerable groups, according to the UN description of what a vulnerable group, what a vulnerable person is. And we obviously are coming to the end. We've come to the end of the football World Cup. Now, we know that Qatar has a terrible record on human rights for LGBTQ individuals. We also know that the church has played its part in not always being the place that the LGBTQ community need it to be. The church isn't always a safe place. So in light of the fact that as a people who are affiliated with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that we're having this big worldwide moment of the World Cup, we decided to host the World Cup of Christmas Movies. So a little bit of Christmas joy, while we encourage you to make a donation to Affirmation. Any donations that we receive in this month are going to be forwarded to Affirmation, which supports LGBTQ families who are affiliated with or adjacent to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. At the moment, the final two movies in this final is Elf versus the Muppets. Now, it looks like we know who the winner is. If you want to have your say in this poll, you can find the poll on YouTube in the community tab, or if you go onto our Facebook page, you can also comment. So we are going to announce the winner at the end of this show. That will be our final update of the year. And like I say, we encourage you, while you vote, please donate to Affirmation. Okay, back to more update stuff. Okay, so yeah, we've been working with individuals. We're also working in an interfaith setting. We're working with other organisations, charities and faith groups on safeguarding and just sort of in general. This Tuesday, I'm going to be able to go to the Scottish Parliament to be part of a rally there. We're doing that as 21st Century Saints. It's been so empowering to work with charities and organisations and individuals who are desperate to work with the church. They are kind and wonderful and faithful and come from all sorts of different backgrounds, and they are here to help. And we hopefully are trying to bridge that gap and bring that relationship together. We are also analysing recommendations from the Independent Inquiry into Childhood Sexual Abuse, which that report came out a few months ago. Sarah, could you maybe briefly just talk about what that inquiry is?
Yeah, that inquiry is one that took place. There's been 15 different independent inquiries into child sexual abuse, looking at abuse in sort of religious settings, which is the one we've paid particular attention to, foster care, various other you know, like Westminster, the Lord Jenning. It was all based on the back of Jimmy Savile. It originally started in 2014 as a voluntary inquiry, but
Sarah, for most of our audience, we're kind of equally UK and USA. Do you want to just explain a little bit about Jimmy Savile?
Because Jimmy Savile was a famous TV personality, the 60s and 70s, really famous, incredibly well known, and he had access to thousands of children through the work he did, voluntary work, charity work with communities, with hospitals, with schools. And before he died, there were lots and lots of complaints about him behaving in a sexually abusive way that nobody took seriously because of his celebrity status. They were brushed under the carpet. They were ignored. They simply took no notice, in all honesty. Victims were silenced and ignored. After his death, even more people came forward to speak out about his abusive behaviour, and there were hundreds and hundreds of victims. That eventually led to an inquiry around how had this happened? How could this man have been such a pinnacle of children's TV, children's celebrity status? How could he have had such a following and such a national status and have been able to abuse so many children, and nobody believed and stopped him? So,
and I think part of the point of what had happened was because he knew how to work with these really big agencies. So he was part of the national broadcast of the British the BBC, and he was also very closely affiliated with police organizations, charitable groups,
government.
So, yeah, the government. So he was very, very much using the institutions who just sort of saw him as this funny, slightly wacky guy to access children.
And sometimes ignored what he was doing because actually he was making a lot of money for them. So actually deliberately chose to ignore what he was doing. But he was very powerful, very influential, and he continued to abuse for many, many decades. Mm-hmm. When people finally came forward, the inquiry decided to start looking at how had this happened? How did we get into such a state where this level of abuse had been allowed to continue across so many different settings and decades and people? What the inquiry found when it started on a voluntary basis was that agencies and organisations were hiding information. They were covering things up and they weren't being honest with the inquiry. So they changed it to a statutory footing, which meant the inquiry had the power to compel people to give evidence to them. And that was a really useful step. Certainly, I was working in the statutory sector at the time, and we had a very clear message that it is illegal to destroy anything that the inquiry might want to see. So we kind of had to do a really quick think about records and think, well, actually, data protection, we probably should destroy that, but we can't because the inquiry might possibly want that. So there was a really powerful message once it went on the statutory footing. Now, what the independent inquiry in religious settings found, and really usefully, our church made a submission. They were part of that inquiry. They attended it. It's a matter of public record, so we will put the link in the show. So if anybody wants to go and read it, have a look at it. If you go into the search bar at the top of the report and put in Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it will bring up every time the church is mentioned or every time anybody from the church speaks and addresses and answers questions to the inquiry. So it might be an interesting read for those of you that would like to do that.
Let me tell you, it is a very, very, it's a very, very interesting read.
And I think what we need to be clear as well is the church made submissions to this independent inquiry in October 2019. So over 3 years ago. Since then, every agency that submitted to the inquiry has been asked to respond to the final inquiry report with what they've learned from the inquiry and what they have taken away from that and what they're going to be doing within their organisation. I logged onto the inquiry website a little while ago, sometime this last week or so, and read all the responses of lots of other churches. I couldn't see a response from our church yet, so I'm hoping that will be coming soon. Lots of other churches. It was interesting to see what the Anglican Church, the Catholic Church, Jehovah's Witnesses, Baptists, Quakers. It was interesting to read what they've all learned from the inquiry and what they're going to be doing as a result of that. I couldn't find our church submission. Maybe I missed it. If it's there, please send it to me, somebody. But I don't think I did miss it. I think we're still waiting for that to come forward. But when we have that, we will tell you what the church learned from the inquiry. Meanwhile, we can tell you what everyone else has learned from the inquiry.
Exactly. So we are going through that inquiry itself, the recommendations, all of the testimony. Like we've mentioned, the church gave evidence in that, and we're waiting for the response. Now, the testimony given by the church representative to the inquiry is, like we say, it makes fascinating reading. Now, we have also been asked, and this is something we're super excited about, we've been asked to give a presentation about our work to a national conference on abuse. Now, we are very excited to be doing this, and in preparing for this, yeah, we've been very busy and lots has been happening. I'm going to come back to that in a little minute. Now, what is the church currently doing? Because we've been asking all of these questions. We've been able to sit with people who are part of the decision-making process within the church. We've had fantastic conversations with leaders at a local level, leaders at a national and area level. And we are really thankful for their time. What we're able to tell you is that safeguarding, there is going to be a rollout of a safeguarding pilot program here in the UK, and it's going to be piloted in London. It's going to be based on the existing, what you've heard us talking about, the Canterbury Stake model, which has created its sort of own, it's piloting its own sort of safeguarding procedure. So it's going to be an adaptation of that, and like we say, it's going to be rolled out in London. It is, we're also going to be getting DBS checks. We're also going to be seeing safeguarding leads called throughout the church here in the UK. We are delighted about that. Sarah, DBS checks. Do you want to? Oh, the sigh. Oh, the pain.
It is a pain, isn't it? Well, DBS checks have been an ongoing thing for a long, long time, haven't they? We've been talking about the importance of these background checks. The importance of somebody, is somebody's name on what's called in the UK the barred list. I don't know what is referred to in other nations, but in the UK it's the barred list. And if somebody's name is included on that list, it means that they have been deemed unsuitable to be allowed to work with children or vulnerable adults. And that will usually be because of the result of a conviction or a caution, or it might be professional misjudgment, misbehaviour, inappropriate professional conduct that actually gets them onto that barred list. But if somebody is named on that barred list, it is illegal for that person to work with children, youth or vulnerable adults. It is also a criminal offence for anybody to ask somebody on the barred list to work with children or vulnerable adults. So as far as the church are concerned, if the bishop calls somebody to be a primary teacher and their name is on the barred list, the bishop is committing a criminal offence by asking them to do that work.
Can you repeat that? Can you just say that again very clearly?
I will repeat that. It is an illegal in the UK under the Safeguarding Vulnerable Persons Act of 2006. It is illegal, and it's section 9, if anybody wants to go and look it up, it is illegal for a bishop to, or for anybody, not a bishop, anybody, to ask somebody to undertake employment or voluntary work with a child or vulnerable adult if their name is on the barred list. It is a criminal offence. Now, That is our absolute best understanding of the law. If somebody can come up to us who's a lawyer and say, actually, you've got that completely wrong, then please come and tell us.
Let me just tell you why where we get this from, what the source is. We mentioned the independent inquiry into childhood sexual abuse. The church says that the church representatives say there that the person who's responsible for safeguarding in the ward is the bishop. So a breach of safeguarding would make, the church has said it's the bishop who's liable. And what we tend to hear from bishops and state presidents is we're waiting for the church to do something.
Yeah.
But the testimony has made it very clear, very clear. Now, what we're doing is we're getting all of that. We're seeking more clarification about it, but it's a very clear point that's made. So tell me something, Sarah. I know you've got a comment too, but I'd also like you to include within that, What would happen if a bishop unknowingly, completely unknowingly, asked someone to work in a calling where perhaps their companion or they're visiting a family, if they're in a situation where they have called someone to work with children and they're on that barred list, what would happen? What could happen? Well,
potentially what could happen is there could be a criminal prosecution of the person who asked somebody to do that work. Potentially there could be prosecution. That's not to say there necessarily would be, but the law mm-hmm. allows for that to take place. The law allows that if it was seen that they had done that.
And what does the fine and maximum term look like?
Well, there's a, I'm not sure what the maximum fine is, but the punishment is a fine or 5 years imprisonment. So we actually are trying to say to the church, you have made a matter of public record by saying to the government inquiry, and it's now a matter of public record, that the person responsible for safeguarding an award is the bishop. Now, I don't know if every bishop in the UK is aware that they are fully, completely responsible for safeguarding. The church also told the inquiry that bishops have a significant amount of local autonomy. Now, I don't really understand that statement. I'm a bit confused by it, because we're saying the bishops have got a lot of local autonomy, but actually when you speak to a bishop and say, I really think you should start doing DBS checks, this is how you can get these checks accomplished, this is how much it will cost you, this is why you need to do them, and these are the consequences of not doing them, the most severe consequence being a child is abused by somebody who's known to pose a risk. When you actually mention that to a bishop, they say, oh, I'm not allowed to do anything until the state president tells me. State presidents will say, I'm not prepared to do anything until such times as the area presidency say you can do it. So you've just got this kind of brick wall where a state president will say, I'm not going to let my bishops do that because the area presidency haven't authorised it and haven't agreed it. You've got bishops who say, well, I can't do it because the state president won't let me. And we're saying, we have got victims pleading with us. When are the church going to take safeguarding seriously?
Let me just make this really clear. Because, I'm really hopeful for the people who were involved in, what we're saying here isn't speculation. What we're saying here is what not every stake president or bishop or church leader necessarily thinks this way. I mean, certainly Sarah and I have won Bishop Roulette. I mean, our church leaders are fantastic.
And state president, we are winning.
Absolutely. We really, really are. Yeah. They are fantastic guys and they are committed to safeguarding. Yeah. But being committed to safeguarding looks different wherever you go. Now, let me just make really clear, when we are hearing someone who's in church leadership saying, I am not going to allow DBS checks, that's a problem. That is a huge problem. And you ought to know, if you have said those words, you ought to know why that's a problem. Ultimately, we are pointing out here, this is why, one of the reasons why we poured over those guidelines is because bishops themselves are liable for these types of breaches. Now, if it's not enough to sort of cover your own backs and make sure that the bishops that we call are completely protected in the law, we point out that DBS checks add a level of protection to the church while not being in any way a fail-safe. There's something else that we need to show that we are serious. Now, if you're delaying that, if there is no reason why that could not happen tomorrow, because we're in a church that if a conference happened and something is said to us, the church implements it, the membership are waiting to go, we do this so well, it would be implemented instantaneously. Yeah. We can do that. We're calling on you to act.
Yeah. Well, let me just share. The reason I have to say that my faith and my trust in the, I know we've been told DBS checks are coming. We've been told the area presidency are looking at them. We've been told it's happening.
Yes.
But my faith and my trust is a little low in that area at this moment in time. And I'll tell you why it's a little low.
Why is that? Tell me why.
It's a little low, Jane, because I'm going to read from the Church Commission to the Independent Inquiry in Child Sexual Abuse. And the Church stated, that the church does not routinely undertake DBS checking because it is not mandated in law, and because it considers that its clear, robust and well-managed policies, procedures and arrangements for safeguarding children minimise the risk of abuse and protect children and youth. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is considering how it could more fully make use of these checks. They've been considering this since the submission date on the 28th, I think it was, of October 2019. So they've been considering it for 3 years. And for half of that time, they've had COVID, but they haven't even had to go to church and do anything. But they're still considering it. The Church of Jesus Christ does undertake ad hoc DBS checking, e.g. DBS checking was undertaken for all members who worked directly with youth of the church during the August 2019 for the Strength of Youth Conference.
But that wasn't the actual church. Oh my goodness.
Right. Let's think about this. The reason the church did DBS checks for youth conference was because they wouldn't be allowed to use the premises unless they were complying with safeguarding law. So they did DBS checks. That same week, this church sent 14 plus, went to especially for youth, went to the Strength of Youth Conference. Those leaders would have had DBS checks. A lot of the beehives and deacons, although I don't think we call them that now, do we? The 12 and 13-year-olds would have gone to annual camp for a few days. Did they do the same DBS check on those annual camp leaders? Now, we'd love to hear about this. If your child went to youth camp this last summer, please let us know if your youth camp leaders for the 12 to 13-year-old had a DBS check. If they did, we want to shout it from the rooftops that the church used them and did a fabulous job of it. If they didn't, we want to know, because we want to be saying to the church, that was a failure that you could have avoided, and let's not let that happen again next year. So this is why my faith is low. The church have been considering how to more fully use DBS checks for 3 years. How long does it take to fully consider whether you're going to follow what all the leading experts in child protection say you should do to safeguard children? I don't know how long that...
Yeah.
How long does that take?
So what we do know very, very, what has been made very, very clear to us is that currently safeguarding is being looked at, not just in these pilot programs, but for the whole area. They're taking it seriously. And so it's current, it's serious, and it's...
I'd hate to see what happened if they didn't take something seriously. If it takes them 3 years and they're taking it ever so seriously, what happens to the things that aren't serious?
Can I tell you what, right? We need to talk about this because this is one of the things that we sort of struggle with, that everybody we work with struggles with, that people who reach out to us struggle with. I want to be able to believe that it is really important and that we are really doing it, versus people who are like, oh, it's not really going to happen. It doesn't really mean a whole lot unless it's bad optics. There's not really going to be a change. And also that if we push too hard to safeguarding, then the church will just say no, just because they don't like that. And, I really want to be able to say that I believe that it's important and that you're doing it. I think what is behind it is you've got people who are paralyzed because we are so focused on waiting to see what our leader approves. We're so worried in case we do something wrong, and we're waiting for this top-down stuff. Well, we all are. And like I say, the day that we wait for revelation to come on increased safeguarding, yeah, we'll have a party. But meanwhile, you are responsible if you're a bishop right now. And meanwhile, you're responsible if you're a member who's showing up and is sustaining someone who's called in to be primary president and has no idea if that person is a suitable person, does the name appear in the barred list? Can I really sustain someone if that's the case? So we have all of these questions. I think there is a real will. I think it is important. Every single person we've ever spoken to in leadership unanimously has stressed that on a personal level, it is very, very important. That needs to convert to something. Sarah. We do also, though, have more good news. So today, safeguarding, you want to mention something?
Well, today, the first safeguarding lead for award was called, that we know of, the first person in the UK. If you know of somebody else who's already been called a safeguarding lead within their ward, please tell us, because we don't want to get this wrong. So if lots of other people have been called to that capacity, then tell us so we can share that good news.
We are delighted.
But today we know that there was a ward in the UK where a safeguarding lead was called. That's fabulous, fabulous news. The independent inquiry did recommend that in faith communities, a woman should always be called a safeguarding lead, because there was felt to be where there was gender inequality or an imbalance of gender power or any gender disparity whatsoever within faith communities, then that became an additional barrier to reporting. So they did recommend it should be a woman, but we will live with it. Okay, you could call a woman, you can a man, you could call whoever you want. Don't care who you call, just get somebody who is qualified, experienced and knows what they're doing.
But absolutely.
The most important thing that a safeguarding lead needs is absolutely a commitment to vulnerable people, but they also need to be prepared to put their head above the parapet and say, this is unacceptable. This is what has to happen. We need to do away with people that aren't prepared to stand up and be counted when it comes to leadership positions, when it comes to as important things as keeping are vulnerable people safe or making sure our LGBTQ community is safe. We need to really have people in place that have got the courage to do that.
And I think that's the thing to keep in mind about what we're doing is we want to celebrate and highlight, we want to emphasise good practice where it's happening in the church. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that. Sarah wants to talk about that. What we will do, though, as we'll keep telling you how you can be better. So, oh, yeah, we 100%. Celebrate the win, but we're still going to keep mentioning that.
So we are celebrating the win of leaders that will listen to us, leaders that will give us time. We celebrate the win of a safeguarding lead having been called. So the rest of you, state presidents, bishops, think about it. Who have you got? Who have you got who could be called to assist you with your safeguarding responsibilities?
Now, let's also make it really clear in the language that I just used there. We're not talking about a win for 21st century saints. No, we go on about this stuff all the time. We're talking about a win for safeguarding. We're talking about a win for vulnerable people, and for the church organisation. We are always going to seek best practice. We've been doing this podcast. We have lots of things that we want to talk about. Safeguarding is one of them, a huge important part, which is one of them. So this is not about us. Okay, next year, we as 21st Century Saints are very excited to be taking a sort of more full role in volunteering with Sunstone UK. So we are really excited to be stepping up and being able to support the work there. That's something that we're hugely excited about, and dates for that will be going out pretty soon. So get your calendars ready. We're also really excited to support Thrive UK. We know so much good work has been done in Thrive throughout Europe. We are very, very hopeful that we are going to be able to have a Thrive Scotland. So watch this space. If you want to come and visit the place where you will be healing in your soul, come visit and we will show you how to party like Scots people. We're going to continue to be working with the incredible team that is the Britvengers, and if you are keeping your eye on Mormonism, Mormon podcasting, you know the incredible work that's been done by members of the Britvengers. If you need a prompt, go check out Nemo the Mormon's work. But absolutely, we've got lots of things happening there, including we are going to be working, I think just next week, with Priesthood Dispatches on his end of the year show. I believe that's still coming up, still to be announced, but we're going to have tons of fun. And of course, the pantomime. What is it? Cinderella?
Cinderella. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, narrated by Radio Free Mormon himself. This is going to be glorious. Throughout next year, our podcast will continue to focus on more issues. We're going to be interviewing more guests. The first year we had a lot of guests on while we were sort of finding our feet. This year we've had a lot to say ourselves. Next year we're going to be getting back to hearing some of the voices that influence Mormonism the most, and to be able to inform members and those affiliated with Mormonism here in the UK about what's happening and some of the different perspectives across Mormonism. So what we're looking to do is to have Safeguarding Sundays, and I think the first Sunday of every month we'll be focusing on this project.
And we hope for good news all
yes.
the time.
Oh, please keep us informed. But we're not done. We have got so much more. Okay, safeguarding posters. I thought we could run through this in 15 minutes, and we've just had so much to tell you. So we're going to step it up a little bit.
Yeah, let's step the pace up. Posters,
safeguarding posters.
Fantastic. Again, we've actually seen a really good response with site presidents, bishops being willing to have these posters up. I'm aware a poster went up in a ward today for safeguarding, which is fabulous news. What we need on those posters is what to do if you suspect a child is being abused, some agencies where people can seek help if they need help, they're being abused, they have been abused, and how to contact the local authorities to report abuse. We need that information on those posters, and we need them to be big, not little, big posters, laminated. Look as though we're taking it seriously, folks.
That's part of safeguarding, and let me just make it really clear. If you need one in your ward, they should be in every ward. You go into any building in the UK and they are all there. If you need one in your ward, get in touch with us. Yeah. We will send you the information, some images of what it could look like. Not only that, if you need help to physically put it up, Sarah will even come and do it for you. Right, Sarah?
I will. Invite me to your church and I'll come and put the poster up for you.
Because you won't be the first church where Sarah will have...
You won't be the first church where I've done that.
She is passionate, people. She will come and do that if
we need to keep our children safe. We also need to encourage people to carry on with writing letters, because they are getting a fabulous response. Very particularly, we know the church are taking note when an MP is writing to them.
Exactly what I was just about to come to. So that's something that's really important. Sarah, it's up to you how much you want to talk about this, but I feel it's important to touch on. As a result of what we've been doing along the template letters, also shout out to Marco in the comments, who was someone else. It was so great. He took us with him by video to hand deliver his letter. It was so great.
It was brilliant. It was great.
So, when you contact your elected representative, I
told him my story. When I contacted my elected representative, she was great. She listened. We agreed a date for a meeting. We met online. We had a long discussion. I shared lots of information and concerns about safeguarding within the church, shared some of the things that we were requesting the church to do. She was very concerned and said that she had been in the position as Minister of Safeguarding for exploitation and also for victims at various points during her government years. And her understanding was that actually the church really were not taking safeguarding as seriously as they should. She took various kind of actions on that, which we'll cover in another time. She took various actions on that. But she did write a letter to the church asking the church to explain to her what they are doing about safeguarding. We can read the letter if you want me to read the letter that she sent to the church. Should we do that another time?
Do you know what? Let's do it another
Let's
time.
Let's do it another time.
Unless our audience desperately, desperately needs it right now.
If not, we'll read it next time. It's a great letter. We'll read it another time.
We'd like to hold on to this because there is going to be another update show at some point. Okay. Continue, Sarah. But you had good feedback.
Yeah, and very good feedback. And very good feedback and very good discussion with the independent chair of the local safeguarding board for the county where I live in the UK. A very good conversation. And he had a conversation with the MP, and then they both had a conversation with me. So people do take it seriously. People don't just think, oh, it's not making a fuss about nothing. People are taking it seriously when we go to them and raise. These are the things that worry us. These are the things that we're hearing about. These are the things that we kind of would like to see some action on.
So what we do know is that when you are tenacious, and Sarah is tenacious, MPs have a responsibility to follow up on this. And you, wherever you are, you're literally the representative. You know you do. You know they do. But they don't always respond. And sometimes it takes some pushing. So the fact that anyone sent these letters in the first place is a huge, huge thing, because they are aware of it. But they have to take it seriously, and they have to make inquiries and find out what's going on.
And can I just say as well, when the MP writes back to your local church, writes back to your local bishop or state president, the MP will not give your name. They will simply say, a constituent has contacted me. Now, that didn't quite work for me, because, of course, my bishop and my state president knew perfectly well this letter would have come from me. So the anonymity didn't quite actually work. But that's fine. That was fine for me.
Yeah, Sarah's happy to go in and say, I sent this letter, and here's the response I got. You know, and if you want to do that, awesome. If you don't, that's fine.
But I was just going to say, you don't have to do that. If it's not safe for you to do that, you don't have to do it. Stay anonymous.
Exactly. And so if you need support with doing that, Sarah and I are absolutely here to advise you. But it's really important to note that they contact the bishops. And when these types of questions are being asked, it's tough for bishops. Sorry, Sarah, we've just kind of lost you a little bit there.
It does throw the bishop into a panic. And your heart does. It throws the bishop into a panic, being questioned by an MP, like, please, I want you to put in writing to me what you are doing about safeguarding. It throws the bishop into a panic. And your heart goes out to the bishop, because you know they're good people. It's not, they don't want to operate like that. They're good people that are struggling. But the fact it throws the bishop into a panic is good, because it means it gets sent up to the state president, to the area president, to the church lawyers. And that's the way things have to be to get change.
Absolutely. So we're going to take a break for a moment just to quickly let you know about our update before we have one final thing, probably the biggest thing we're going to talk about tonight. We've had all of these great advances in safeguarding. We can tell you that things are happening. So we will have lots to tell you about next week. But again, we want to remind you of our fundraiser for Affirmation, that any donations that we receive in this month are going to Affirmation. So as you vote in the World Cup final of Christmas movies, let me just make the announcement. On you go, Sarah, please do.
I was just going to say, LGBT communities, our community, Jane and me, it's our community. We love them. Really support them, please support them.
Absolutely, please do. We see you and we love you. And also thank you to Affirmation for all the incredible work that you do.
We're delighted to support you.
I do love your Christmas jumper.
Stand up so you can see it properly.
Do
you like my Christmas jumper, everyone?
Adorable. I don't even have a Christmas jumper. I need to go Christmas jumper shopping.
Jumper for 20 years. I've had this, but
you have.
Go for it, Jane. Right, we've got a build up now. We should have had all the final bits in. Come on,
final bits are all in. So, Elf versus the Muppets, and the winner is World Cup of Christmas Movies 2022. Winner is Elf. And I have a very happy boy.
Is Ronan happy? Is Ronan happy?
Delighted. I think there would have been absolute anarchy if it had went another way. Thank you so much to everyone who voted throughout the rounds and everything. And we really appreciate you. And we'll let you know how much we raise over the course of the fundraiser for Affirmation. Now, finally, we acknowledge that lots of things are happening within safeguarding here in the United Kingdom. With that in mind, earlier we mentioned the fact that we have been asked to speak to a national conference about our work in safeguarding here in the UK, and that will be in the first half of 2023. As we prepare to deliver a presentation about what we've learned, one of the things that we are commonly asked is if we can share any information or offer any insight about the scale of abuse within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints here in the British Isles. Now, while there is some accessible data, I'm going to refer you again to that IICSA report. It's a very woolly thing. I'm just going to leave it as some accessible data.
There was some information that was prepared by the church that was ready to be submitted to the inquiry, but because it was not used in the inquiry's final report and final decision making around what recommendations to make, those particular documents were not made available to the wider public, and they were a table of allegations, the table of referrals to LADO, which is referrals on people in positions of trust who've abused children, and they were church disciplinary tables. That information the church have collated, but it wasn't publicly available.
Yeah, so we do have some kind of number, but what we're going to do is just leave it, because we'll talk about that in a special episode at some point later. So while there is some accessible data, which we're going to talk about in a future episode, abuse is particularly underreported in faith communities. It's a very complicated and cloudy picture. 21st century saints would like to invite people who are from the UK and Ireland to help us gather data to build a picture of what is actually happening, or has historically happened, and how the church responds. Now, we'd like to know about successes as well as failings, but most of all, what we'd like people to do is to share with us what they've experienced or what they've witnessed, and help us to build a picture of what's happening. Now, we're interested in the whole spectrum of experiences, which may include bullying, gender issues, putting financial pressure on vulnerable people, we're at tithing settlement time of year, sexual abuse, online abuse and grooming, racism, LGBTQ experiences, anything that could possibly come under the category of what you would consider abuse or what someone else may consider to be abuse. That's a very, very wide range of potential experiences there. Now, we want to hear about abuse that might not have happened in the church, but where you received counsel from church leaders about what you should do. We also want to hear from you if you haven't directly experienced abuse yourself, but you might be aware of situations where in your own ward or in your own stake, or you know in your connection, your world, where you know that others have experienced abusive situations, and that's going to help us build a picture. We formally want to invite you to contact us direct. We are both on social media. If you want to do that, or if you'd like to do it through our website, you can be completely anonymous. Your messages will be completely confidential, and your stories will be held sacred. Now, to speak to us or for more information, please reach out, and we ask that you consider sharing when we post about it on social media, or even this live stream or podcast episode, if you consider sharing this with others where you feel that you're able to do so. We're going to share more details about that conference as soon as we can. And in the meantime, if you need any support with the issues that we've spoken about, we will put some links down in the show note to organisations such as Rape Crisis, the NSPCC and Samaritans.org. We are here to be able to answer more questions if you have any, but we want to formally invite people to come forward. Now, we know that that's a big ask, especially as it comes during Christmas and there's a lot going on. It can churn a lot up. So please understand and be reassured that your stories and your experience and what's right for you is the most important thing right now. We have, before we have even started this work, had many people come forward. We've already got we're ready to be able to sort of make comments on some of the data and what that looks like. So yeah, we invite you, and we will responsibly signpost you if you feel like you need further information. So thank you so much for tonight. Sarah, before we head out, is there anything that you want to say? Is there any final comment you want to give?
There isn't. There's no comment. Just keep doing what you're doing to support the work of safeguarding. It needs people to speak out.
And we're going to put the statement that I just read up on social media pages. So please consider whether sharing it is something that you're able to do. Thank you so much to all of our donors in 2022 and since we've begun. We appreciate you. I hope that we've been able to demonstrate in some way how we've been able to use your donations. We'd ask if you would like to keep donating to us. We've got our link in the chat notes on our social media pages. You can donate to us very, very simply at 21stcenturysaints.org. We thank you, and we wish all of our audience a peaceful Christmas, and we bless your journey. Yeah. If you need us, we are right here. Thank you so much. We love you.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas, everybody. And thank you for all your support. Means the world. So thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone. God bless.